Thank you guys so much for joining me today. My name is Nicolene. I'm your host. And today's conversation is going to be with a young lady. Her name is Marie, not her real name. But Marie has decided to stay anonymous today. The whole purpose of this program is to share your story and to see how your experiences can inspire someone else who's in a similar situation or just going through a tough time. So grab your lemonade, have a seat. If you're driving, turn your volume up. And Marie will be with us in just a moment. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Marie. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Great. So I gave a little bit of background earlier before you joined, explaining to our listeners that your name is Marie, not your real name. But
correct.
As promised, it's important that you remain anonymous and that you just wanted to share your story with us today to see how what you have experienced can inspire someone else, you know, have them understand that whatever they're going through right now is not the end of the road and there's hope. So do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself as much as you can and remain anonymous?
So I'll tell you how it was and then I can explain how it is now.
Okay, that sounds great.
So for me growing up, I'm 26 years old now. My parents, they had a lot of abuse. They had an abusive relationship. So they divorced quickly when I was at the age of two. My mother found another guy, that was good. She thought was, and I felt like she always had a bad choice in men, which I believe carried on over to me later on. At the age of four, the father of the man that she had met began molesting my sister and I. And for me, your kids, I couldn't hear you.
I'm sorry. Did you say at the age of four?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh man. Okay.
So that went on for a while, but I knew things that, you know, four-year-olds should not know. I learned how to orgasm. I knew about the male body. And so going into kindergarten, you know, which for me, it's still difficult for my brain to grasp, like how such small children are ordered to go into a classroom. And it's a little crazy. I think they should be a little older and that would, you know, be better. I think maybe some type of mannerism class would be best first. That's just my opinion.
Right.
But I knew a lot of things that other kids did not know, but I knew it was wrong to know the things I knew because of like just watching porn. And I was exposed to porn, you know, very young. And the man that was doing this to us said, well, if you ever tell anyone, you're going to go to jail. And so will I. And my child like mine, all I could think of is, oh my gosh, I don't want to go to jail. I didn't understand the trauma that would come from that later on. So fast forward, we moved to a different state. Life is good for the most part. There's lots of...
Marie?
Yes, ma'am. Hi.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we'll pick up from you guys moved from where you were staying and you changed state. Now, did your mom's boyfriend move with you guys? Did this abuser move as well with you guys?
The abuser did not. He stayed in the state that he was in and would later come to the state that we were in. but in the boyfriend of my mother did go with us. He was actually the reason why we moved. His family was from that state.
Okay.
So we could be closer to his family. My family was very small, very small. We have family from up north, but my mother and my grandmother as well also went through traumatic.
Marie?
Yes. Hi.
I know. You were saying your mom and your grandmother, they went through similar traumatic situations?
They did. So my mother was repeatedly raped and beaten by her father. My grandmother, I'm not exactly sure what had happened, but I do know that my grandmother lost custody of her two children, which my mother was put into a home. And where she was from, those are a little bit different. You cannot leave until you're 18 unless you get married or pregnant. So her way out was to get married and pregnant, which was to my father. She was at the age of 16 and my father was 30. So there was a 15-year difference there. I just think
that... Was this like a foster home? I'm sorry. Was it like a foster home that she was in?
Yes.
Okay.
So I think that that affected, you know, us growing up and the choices that she made. I think she tried really hard to keep someone in our life for us so we could have a good life. And it was all about the kids and making sure that we had a good life. And I see that now, but then it was just difficult and I just didn't understand things because my mother would lash out. They would get into arguments and she never learn to cope with her emotional, I guess it would be her traumatic events that she had went through when she was younger.
Right.
And she was violent as well. She would lash out. There was multiple times I've seen her try to commit suicide. Oh. She has cut herself. She's accidentally cut my sister. When my sister would try to take, she had a scalpel and sliced my sister's hand. It was an accident, but it happened. And she would wrap bone cords around her neck, just different arguments that went on over time. Mm-hmm. And those continued all the way up until they split up around the age I was 14. I actually had a really good, my best friend's dad came in one time in the middle of an argument, and I hated being at home because it was not somewhere I wanted to be. I loved playing, you know, with all my brothers and sisters and my stepbrothers and sisters, but it was just not a good environment for us. The other kids were allowed to leave, but then we would be left to deal with the arguments, the accusations of cheating. There was an investigator that had followed us one time, and looking back, now I realize what it was. Then I didn't. There was just some mysterious man that had followed us to a few places while we were out. We were going, you know, getting Bibles and going to church. My mother did her best. She just went through a lot. She never learned how to deal with that.
So this gentleman that was following you, who was he investigating?
He was watching my mother to ensure that she wasn't cheating.
Oh, so your stepdad hired someone to watch your mom?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, so it was a big mess. And then they split up. They could never work out their problems. And we saw all of it, all of it. My mother later would meet another man. So the split with them, she was going out to bars. And I don't know why she immediately went into another relationship, but she did. And it was with an alcoholic.
How old were you at this time?
I was 14 when they split. And I remember I was 15 when she met the new guy.
So a little bit back. So the molestation that started when you were four, it ended up, what age were you when you guys moved away?
Right at 8.
About 8. So 4 years.
4 years.
And then you guys...
And my child mind then did not grasp what it was. I still had so much hope, you know, like I was excited that we had rewards. He would take us to McDonald's and things like that. So I really looked forward to it.
Right.
We just thought it was a game. He convinced our minds, you know, it was like a game, like playing.
And
And we
then
would take baths and things like that. So he had moved up to the state that we were in, but we did not see him again. And it was by our choice. My mother never knew anything. Nobody knew anything except for her and I. But later on, being around, we consider them our step cousins.
Right.
We believe, my sister and I, that he did the same to them. There was a few girls. Just from how they were acting, we would be in the showers, and this girl, she would touch herself, and she would think it was funny. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's what I was thinking. But I never reached out to tell anyone because I was so young, and I still believe that we would go to jail.
Right.
So later on, I just kept that secret. We kept it to ourselves. Until this day, my mother does not know. I did tell my grandmother. I got really comfortable with my grandmother. My grandmother lived with us our whole lives until we moved out. So around the age of 15, when she had met this alcoholic, you know, I'm becoming a teenager, and I'm realizing that my mother does not have a lot of money. She never graduated high school, so she was always working minimum wage jobs. I never really asked for much, but she did her best. My sister was very demanding. She wanted things that we could not afford. We dealt. Now, I also, in school, I was a very good kid. I was on the cheer team. I had good grades. I would get honor rolls and things like that. But coming home, it's the home life I struggled with. You know, I was doing so well in school. So around the age of 15, when I guess the hormones in my body started kicking in, I would get, I guess, depressed about being at home so much. And I just hung out and I clung to my friends. I was always at their houses. I was never home. My sister was. She went through a lot of depression. She couldn't find her own vice and coping mechanism. And I did. And she complained a lot. She used to say, you know, I was so popular and I was this and I was that. And she had no friends. And she got picked on a lot in high school. There were several times I had to stand up for her. I had gotten in fights for her of other girls. They were just really mean to her, throwing gum in her hair, flipping her desk in class. And that broke my heart.
Were you the older sister?
No, I was the younger sister, but I was different. I did not take anyone's crap.
I understand.
I guess I had more fight than she did.
So how did you cope? Did you, by, you know, staying popular, having a lot of friends, that was your way out of not having to deal with what's going on at home?
I believe so. I was friends with everyone, even the friends that were picking on my sister, and no one even knew we were sisters because we looked completely different. She had blonde hair, blue eyes, light skin. I was this dark headed girl, dark eyes. I had like an olive skin tone, so everyone just thought I was so pretty. And so I guess that made life easier, but at the same time, I still went through the same thing she did.
Of course, yeah.
And bullying, yes, just in different ways. I was bullied. I was bullied by boys. I had a gap in my front teeth, and, you know, they made fun of me, but I never let it affect me because I knew one day I would be older and I could make my own choices. I didn't have to be around these people. And I always looked at them in a different light than I guess she did. She looked at them as a superior and I looked at them as inferior and, you know, them of not really going anywhere in life. Later on with those characteristics.
Wow. So now you were 15, you're in high school, where are you in your schooling?
In school, I'm still cheering. But I'm also getting into drinking. So my friends, and then later on sneaking out, and all of my friends, we became really controlling about our parents, but my mother was different. She let us do what we wanted. She would even buy me alcohol on the weekends. She started coming to me and was like, hey, she would hurt herself on purpose to get pain pills from the doctor and then have me sell them to my friends because she learned I was smoking pot. So she thought it was okay, and we needed money for the bills, so I took it upon myself. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna help my family. So I would do that, and I would just sell it to the people in school. I made friends with people who did it. Later on, around the age of 17, I started taking them instead of not just selling them. Right. I became addicted to pain pills at the age of 17. I was physically and mentally addicted to the point, if I did not have it, I was physically sick. I could not sleep. I would shake. I had withdrawals. And my mother was begging me. I had moved out at 17. I actually quit school. She begged me not to. But at the same time, during these years, I was also dealing with this man that was alcoholic, stealing my mother's money. Our bills were constantly shut off. My mother would stay gone for a month at a time. I would have to go to school and get rides from my friends. I was eating ramen noodles for dinner. Mm-hmm. I just got tired of it, and I just kept getting deeper into this depression. My sister moved off with her boyfriend. She was going to a completely different school. My brother, I had a brother, that my blood brother, he was handicapped, so he never really understood any of it anyway. He mainly stayed in his room playing video games, and he was also in and out of the hospital getting surgeries or the care that he needed, and my mother would be there for him.
Right.
So it left me at home with an alcoholic who I would have to kick my door in because he would be so drunk and not even hear me knock. I did not have a bed, and I slept on the couch. Most of the time he was passed out on the couch. So it was just difficult. I'd have to sleep in a recliner. I just got tired of it. My mother wasn't home to clean the house, but she still had animals, and they would use the restroom all in the house. I knew everything like that should not be happening. And I couldn't take it anymore. I did not want to be in that house. It was hard for me to participate in even cleaning it. Because the choices that she would make, even if I tried a little bit, she still fell into her old ways, and she's still like this today. Mm-hmm. The man that she is with is sober, but she never had good cleaning habits at all.
Right.
So at 17,
okay, go ahead. I was going to ask, what was your relationship like with this, this person your mom had the relationship with? I know that he was an alcoholic, but how did you guys get on? Was he also abusive to you?
He was not abusive to any of the kids. He abused himself more than anything with the alcohol.
Right.
He wasn't abusive to my mother either. They just fought. He drank a lot, and we got along because I was also drinking. So we had that in common. But as far as him just passing out on the couch and things like that, it was just like, this is not okay.
Right. Right.
So I made the choice to move out, quit school at 17. I actually had met a boyfriend. I went on vacation with my friends. He was older. He had his own place. I went to live with him. Later on, it turned out to be like we had a drug addiction together. We formed that. I think that was my fault because he didn't really care. He was more about smoking pot. Then I was like, hey, try this. And we did. And just 6 months of doing, like taking pain pills for fun became, now we're physically addicted and we have to have this. That led to big problems for me. At the age of 19, I wind up in a rehab. I had 6 pending felonies waiting for me in the courts. And I was on conditional bond, is what they call conditional bond, to go into rehab for 6 months. I cried because I did not want to go. I was going to be away from my family, all these things, you know, all these things that I was taking for granted anyway. I just didn't want to go. So I go forcefully, but willingly, knowing that I would have to be, it's either jail or rehab. And I'm thinking I'm going to go to this hospital kind of place. And I get there and it's a house, and it's, I see all these ladies, and there's like 30 women in the house, and they're all happy. Like, what are they happy about? They're in rehab. So I just learned over time. They got me involved in AA. I learned all these coping mechanisms and creating hope for myself and things I never had. Because right before I went to jail, I considered, I was going to check myself into a rehab, but it was not, the rehab I went to was a sober living house, and it was like very good sober living house. So I'm so thankful for that. And I actually had like just these thoughts. I never had suicidal thoughts, but I knew I could not continue the life in the way I was living. It was exhausting. It was hell on earth. It was way too much to bear, depending on something, not having it. The guy that I was with, once we got physically addicted to drugs, he became abusive and emotionally abusive, physically abusive. He had hit me, broke my sinus cavity. My mother had brought me to the hospital at one point, and I lied, you know, about what happened. And I didn't even get seen. I was just so, I was hopeless. And I convinced myself, you know, that I would just be fine. I'd find my own way through it.
So you, what age were you when this was happening? So you moved in with your boyfriend, who was, how much older was he?
He was 6 years older than I was. So I was 17. I believe he was 24. The abuse happened from 17 to right at 19, up until I went into the rehab.
So these felonies that you had, so you did not decide, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I need to get help. I'm going to go to rehab. It was just a condition. In order for you to stay out of jail, you had to do this rehab program. Am I correct?
Yes. Okay. But I did have thoughts. I just never, I knew how, I did not know how to take action.
Right.
For something that would be good for me. I did not know how to make a choice and follow through with it. I was horrible at that.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was good in school, I did not know how to make a choice and stay. I did not know how to create environment for myself that would be good for me. I never learned those things. I never knew my true power.
I understand.
And sometimes it takes someone else, you know, speaking to us, but us taking the action and following through and learning how strong we really, really are. And they say getting exposed to things over and over makes you stronger. I don't recommend certain exposures, because you, some things you shouldn't experience at all, but life is not easy. And one thing we will have to experience is the troubles in life. Like, you may not be an addict, but you may know someone who is, and how to deal with that person, and always looking for someone who knows more than you about the situation, I've learned has helped me so much. Even if you're, you know, in marriage, you know, just going and talking to other couples and seeing how they deal with things and how they're making it, instead of just staying stuck in your own perception
right.
of what the situation is.
You're absolutely right. So now you're at rehab. You've met all these wonderful ladies who seem to be happy about being there. So now you're curious, okay, why are they so happy? How did you want that same happiness for yourself? What happened at rehab?
Yeah, I definitely, when I went in there, the first few weeks I was a mess. They got me a job. I quit on purpose because I was in the back. I wanted to go and smoke a cigarette instead of working. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to take responsibility. They threatened to send me back to jail, and I'm like, okay, it's, you know, I'm going to have to do what they say. So, but I still to this day, I didn't like the job. So that's why I was out in the back smoking a cigarette. I shouldn't have done it. But they were just doing the best they could. They didn't want me to be behind on my bills so I could see my family, because that was the only way that you could go and take a pass. They were just trying to help me. But I wind up, I get myself a job. But in the right before I had gotten that job, I remember they had a counselor that would come by, and she talked to me and she said, "What is wrong with you?" And I just looked at her. I'm like, "Man, she's kind of rough." She said, "What? Why are you doing all this?" And I was like, thinking in my head, because I didn't know how to explain myself. I was like, "I miss my mom." And she's like, "No, that's not why." She's like, "You're out here doing all these drugs and all this stuff, and there's no way you're acting out because you miss your mom." And I was like, "Well, honestly, I don't know." And she was like, "Well, I know you need to learn to, you know, be responsible and take responsibility for your actions and learn how to start taking care of yourself and making the right choice." And they taught me, when you don't know how to do, like, focus on doing the right thing, and eventually you can do the next right thing.
Right.
And it'll just start to come naturally. So I'm like, okay. I get a job, and I did really well. I abided by the rules because some of the girls would have family members come and see them at work. So once I started going through the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe that these steps, as long as you use them properly and you understand it. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the first step is admitting that you're powerless. And I had to understand that I was, and I had to give that power over to some perception of God.
I'm just, okay. So I think we have a connection problem. You wavered a little bit recently. Are you moving?
I did. I moved.
Okay. It seems much better right now. So I think it's important. Could you please repeat the section where you said what the first step was?
Yes. So the first step, they taught me, you know, giving up power and learning that you're powerless over this addiction. And like I said, that can be applied to any aspect of your life, because you could be addicted to anything. You could be, or if you want to look at it like OCD, or addicted to hanging out with your friends too much, or anything that is not helping another situation you should be paying attention to.
Okay.
So the second step was admitting or believing that a power greater than myself could bring me to sanity. And then I'm like, what? No, because they say insane is making the same mistake over and over again. And I was definitely insane.
And expecting different results. Yeah.
Exactly. I was so insane. And that one was hard to comprehend, but I started to see things change in my life, the way my brain worked. Eventually, after I did my self inventory, and started developing a perception of God and applying that in humbling myself, hitting my knees at night, even though I worked all day long and I'd have to come home and do a chore or maybe help in the kitchen, and I only watched TV for an hour of a day. It was a whole new way of life for me. And it changed the way I live now. And I'm so thankful for it. I never had structure growing up.
Right.
I was always allowed to do whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. There weren't many rules. I didn't even know that there, you know, were rules to life, and there are, and it's the law, basically.
Right. So this rehab program, that was for the alcohol use. How did they help you with the drug use, or did it do both?
It did both, because they tell you to look at it as alcohol and drugs. You know, it's an addiction. You just, if your brain can't comprehend it, just swap out the word when they use alcohol. Just put your favorite drug in there. And your brain can grasp it.
Okay.
But they chose Alcoholics Anonymous, and I still do today, over Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous is a little bit different. I'm not sure of their reading material, but I do enjoy Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been around for a long time, since back in, I believe it's 1939, and it's a good system. It's worked for a long time.
Okay. Now, did you receive any one-on-one counseling, any therapy for, did you get the chance to speak with anyone about, what happened to you while you were a very small child about the abuse, sexual abuse that you endured?
Yes, so in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have a fourth step, which is your self inventory, and you have to write your entire life story. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to do this. This is crazy. I took a whole notebook, and she said, put everything in there, even if you think I don't want to hear it. All the tough stuff. It's just about telling the truth and admitting to a stranger of all your mistakes or what you had been through, and just getting it out so you can start to see it in a different light and understand where you went wrong and where someone else was wrong. So after doing that, I learned to take responsibility for my actions and not what other people were doing to me, but how I was responding to the situation. I believe the fifth step, yes, that's the fifth step. So going over all the information, making your list, your resentments, and everything.
But how did they help you? Because I can understand that's a very important step, and that's very true. But how do they teach you how, what kind of, you were 4 years old when you were being abused. There was nothing that you could have done to control that situation.
Right.
How did they address this? What did they tell you that helped you to get beyond, if you are beyond what had happened?
Just by understanding that there's other people that have gone through it too, and no, it was not anything that had to do with me. It was something wrong with him.
Right.
Just learning to forgive and let it go and give it to God. Let him handle the situation.
Right. Now, have you seen this
He
individual since you've been through rehab? Have you had any conversations with him?
I did not. I didn't get that chance. I never bothered to reach out. I never wanted any confrontation.
Right.
I could have, went and tried to make amends with him, but I learned that he had Alzheimer's. He got to the point where he couldn't remember who he was and things like that. He just passed away last year.
So you went through rehab. It lasted for 6 months, yeah?
6 months.
6 months. And
After getting out, I had a brand new outlook on life. There's promises in the Alcoholics Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it promises you that you're gonna just have this new outlook on life, and all these things will happen to you after you have the spiritual awakening. And I had it. I all the people in the rehab, they would thank me. Sorry. Someone was calling me. They were thanking me, and they said I was giving them hope, and I was the youngest one in this rehab. And I'm not sure how I was doing that. I guess it was just me living my life, and they could see the change in me. And they were, you go and you speak in the meetings about what happened in your day or what you're mad about and how you're handling it. So you don't just bring a problem to the table, but you also bring a solution. And I became someone that other people looked up to. I guess also coming in, I was still like girls. I came in with head lice, and I did not know I had head lice. So at first, they hated me, and then they all came to love me, and that was so good. It was
That's
so good.
wonderful.
Getting out, I went to court. I had to handle court situation before I was actually released. And through the court system, they took all the felonies, they put it on my youthful offender. During that time, I found out that my lawyer actually had went to jail for solicitation of murder, so that's why it took a little longer.
Your lawyer. I'm sorry.
My lawyer.
Oh, so he had gone to jail. I'm not clear on what happened. Your lawyer that you had through the proceedings while you were in rehab, that person had gone to jail?
Yes. So this lawyer was obtained by my boyfriend. Of course, he's paying him with drugs and whatever else the guy wanted. But he was working on another case, and apparently he had put a hit out on this person, the witness, in his different case, so he could win. Okay. This guy was also addicted to things, so his brain was not working right either.
So that's what was alleged. Did he actually do jail time, or was it he was?
He did.
Okay.
He did jail time. They also revoked his license.
Oh man. So you
had it was to a get, huge thing.
You had You had to get a brand new lawyer when you came out of rehab. With
yes.
Situation. Okay. But did you ever?
Well, I was still in the rehab when the court system gave me a lawyer. Because they're like, okay, I understand this is, you know, this is kind of crazy. But I had to stay a little longer until they fixed things.
Right. Okay. So now you're out. You have a new look on life. You're excited about the future. You have plans. What happened right out of rehab?
Well, I kept the job that I had. I had saved up enough money for a car.
Mm-hmm.
I went on one pass during that rehab, and I saw... because my mother had moved into an apartment. I did not know her address. She did not write me the whole time I was in rehab. My sister did. And then I get out on a pass. So I guess the boyfriend, I still kept him, found my mother. And they both picked me up. We went and stayed with her. But she didn't have a car either. So going back to that was still rough. And I came back and I cried and I cried. I was like, This is crazy. And I found my strength, and I knew I could do things on my own. And it was just so sad. It broke my heart that my mother was still in the situation that she was in. But I knew that it was her situation, and she had to handle it, and I couldn't do that for her.
Wow.
And it was best if I just went in life and did my own thing.
Right. And your boyfriend at the time, did he come to stay with your mom as well, or was he living on his own? Where was he while you were through in rehab?
He was staying with his grandmother.
Okay. Okay. So you're back with your mom, and her situation is the same, and now you have to get out of there.
Yes. So I'm leaving the rehab. I bought my car. It was perfect timing. I feel like God set everything up. My sister was moving out of her house. It needed work done. My boyfriend had the ability to do construction. So we went through. We put a new roof on, all new floors in the house, sheetrock painting. So it was like, it was awesome. I got to, put work into what was going to be mine.
Right. And now, was your boyfriend still addicted at the time? Did he get any help?
So going on that home pass, I spent time with him, and he told me that he was taking what they call Suboxone. So it prevents you from withdrawals in addiction. But I was so full that it didn't affect me, and I still loved him. And I was like, well, if I can do this and I have all this information now, I can help him.
Right.
So I stayed in that situation, and I really believed that my love and my knowledge was going to be enough to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I did speak about the relationship I had with this guy in the rehab, so they knew. And other girls, they would tell them, you know, don't rush into a relationship. But for me, it was a little bit different because I had already previously been with this guy 3 years now since with the rehab time too. And he also paid, I was behind $800. So he paid that, and they saw good in him. And so I looked at it as a good way too. And so we just went forward in life. I'm working really hard. I'm doing great. I straight out of rehab, I immediately enrolled into GED classes. So I got that. They offered me a scholarship to go to the college. And I started college. And then about a year and a half into it, things with the boyfriend I had at the time were getting bad. He was starting to steal money from me. He would lash out and just yell. He wasn't abusive anymore, but he just, he was not who I needed him to be. And I would take him to AA meetings. I sent him to rehab twice. He didn't stay. He would always say, I can come home and I can do this. I'm ready now. I detox. But then he would always go back into the addiction and what put him in that position in the first place. Nice. He couldn't change his playgrounds and the people he hung around. Mm. So it got really bad for us when we moved, and I learned that he had made $26,000 in 3 months with his construction business, but I was paying the bills and taking care of his employees financially as well. Mm. And then I knew something big was going on, something more. And I never tried to dig too far in his life, and I'm happy about that, and I stayed focused on myself. And sorry, I keep getting a beat. I focused on myself, and it got to the point his mother gave me a phone call, said that he was sticking needles in his arm, and I knew that he did not need to be with me anymore. I had my grandmother living with us at the time, and I was taking care of her since I had left the rehab, and she needed a lot of care. She was in a wheelchair with bathing and changing, eating, cooking for her. So I feel like I also became a little bit codependent on our relationship that I had with my grandmother. It was healthy, but at the same time, when she passed away, it was very, very hard for me because she was so dependent on me. And then when she passed away, I had to live this new life, and I did not know how to just be by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So shortly after, I had lost the job I was working because I went to her funeral and I was on a point system. And they let me go. The bereavement days, I was told one thing. We had like a temp service. I was told one thing, and it was actually different. So they let me go, and then it got a little bad for me again. So I knew I could not return to drugs, but I was dealing with this pain I had never known. And it was the pain.
That's the pain of losing your grandmother?
Yes, that loss and that grief. I had never grieved before.
So by now, you had broken up with your boyfriend at the time. You were living on your own with your grandma. Now your grandma passed away and you lost your job. So yes. You're alone.
I was alone. My mother, they tried to let me come and live in their house for like a month, but I couldn't stay. It was too hard. She just did not. The guy that she was with was sober, but it just her cleanliness, I could not mm-hmm. handle. So I went and I lived with a friend in a different location. And then I later moved to Huntsville. I started dancing, which was stripping for money. And then I wind up getting a DUI. So that was not a good choice.
So you had started drinking again?
Yes, I started drinking. Mm-hmm. I knew I couldn't go back to drugs, but I'm like, okay, this alcohol, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not an alcoholic. I was never an alcoholic. So I thought mm-hmm. it would be okay. I was very, very wrong. I emotionally drank and I overdid it. In the where I was from, they didn't have Uber, so you were forced to drive.
Right.
And I had never drank and drive before. Everything was new to me, this whole new lifestyle I was living. But I learned very fast that it was not a good lifestyle after the DUI and having to go through everything again. I later moved to the state that I'm in now. I have a normal job. I started...
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. So when you say go through the same thing again, so the DUI, you were sent back to rehab conditional or what happened?
Oh, okay. No, not rehab. I did have to do DUI classes. And thankfully from the rehab, I was strong enough and smart enough to know that I would have gone back through a rehab. It's not a bad place at all. I just knew for me, I didn't need that time there anymore. They gave me all the tools I needed. I just had to apply them.
Right.
So I started applying them in my life again. I was still having to go to these like classes, drug and alcohol classes, to get the DUI expunged off my record. So I stopped completely drinking 2 years ago. I had gotten a DUI in at the end of 2016, right at the end. And then I fully stopped drinking 2017, November.
That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's amazing. So how it is now, it is amazing. Like, I still have friends that drink, and the craving has completely left. It's not, and I didn't even have to do any classes or anything like that. God became a point where God was not enough. It was actually the man that I had met, and I seen him live a lifestyle where he didn't drink, he didn't smoke. I did both. I wind up quitting cigarettes the summer of 2018. So I am right at a year for that.
That's great. And but yes. Let me ask real quickly. So the last thing you did after that DUI, you had to do classes. And yes. Then after those classes, how did you transition to where you are now? Because yes, you did the classes to get your record expunged.
Excited about life.
Right.
I still had like a lot of hope, and I was happy. I didn't drink as heavily as I was when I got the DUI. I was drinking very, very heavily for maybe a few weeks.
Right.
Like daily drunk, blackout drunk. And then I just cut it down to an occasional drink. And then it just, I don't know, it left me. Like, I didn't want to do it anymore. I stopped the classes early 2017. Mm-hmm. I believe it was in January. But I would still have an occasional drink. And I would swear off the alcohol, and then I would drink again. Does that make sense? I was going like back and forth with it.
Yes.
Before I fully quit.
It does.
And I just woke up one day. I was at a baby shower, and the guy I'm with has a son. And I'm like, man, I'm just looking at this kid, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I didn't even want it in my life. I didn't want to be numb. I wanted to know what was going on. I wanted to feel in control. And I knew that I had to put the alcohol down. I wanted to be in control more than not being in control. I didn't like it anymore.
At what point after this DUI classes, what point did you meet the person that you're with now?
I met him during when I was in the classes.
Okay.
But he never pressed anything on me. I just watched him live, and I observed him, and I was like, man, I want what he has.
Right.
So then I started taking the steps in my life to do that. He just motivated me just by being himself.
Mm-hmm.
And being around a better environment. He never dealt with addiction problems. He never went through traumatic things in his life except for a war. But as far as family, he had a good family structure.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and dad are still together today. They didn't fight. His father was a chief of police in the country that they lived in. Thankfully, he had a good life growing up. He didn't make that many bad choices, but he still had his own mistakes.
Yes, we all do.
Yes, we all do. And for meeting good people and learning that there are good people, for me, I've learned, you know, like Christians, I don't have anything against anyone. Christians are more open-minded to alcohol, whereas other religions aren't so open about it. They don't agree with it. I started studying a bunch of other religions other than just Christianity. I believe in God. If you want to call me something, I guess you could call me Christian because I know more about it than the other ones.
Right.
But as far as following certain things and turning water into wine, I don't believe it's okay to drink, at least for myself, because I don't do it properly. I don't do it in moderation.
Right.
I cannot do it in moderation. So I don't think it tastes good. It doesn't make me feel good. They say a massage and a glass of wine does the same thing for you. Mm-hmm. One might be a little more expensive, but for me, it's worth it.
So you have come a very, very, very long way. And I must say congratulations on how far you have come and how you've handled your situation and where you are right now. It sounds like the relationship that you're in played a really major role in your healing and yes. where you are right now. Do you believe that if this relationship were to end, you would be able to maintain your sobriety or keeping up?
Yes, I know I can, because we don't live together. He's still have me be very, very independent. And I'm still learning how to live life on life's terms. I mean, there's always a new problem.
Right.
But I know how to reach out to people now and not isolate and do all these things that are not good for me. I know how to not hang around people that are not good for me. At least don't get that close to them.
Right.
My friends drink, but I don't hang around them all the time. They live in a completely different state. And when I am around them, they don't pressure me for anything.
So you've learned life how to choose your friends wisely.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you want, I tried to say, pick out, like for me, I'm picking out new friends, you know, in the state I live in now. So I don't pick friends that do things that I don't do or that I don't like.
Right, that's correct. So it sounds like you are more in control now of what happens in your life and you're in a position of power where you know that you have the power to make the choices. You are responsible for how you deal with the whatever situation life throws at you.
Absolutely.
And that's a great place to be. I am very proud of you. I am very happy.
You.
I'm very happy that things are the way they are with you now. I really appreciate you coming on here, telling your story. And we hope that what you've experienced is not for nothing. You know, your experience
yes.
has made you stronger, I believe. And
absolutely.
You sharing your story, I am sure, will be an inspiration to others who are going through something similar or knew of someone who's going through something that's similar.
Yes.
People
just thinking that you can't do something on your own and knowing that you do have the power in you, creating good environments for yourself, reaching out when you need it, being around good people.
Right. That's absolutely right. Marie, I thank you so much, and I wish you the very, very best.
Thank you so much.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
I
am excited to share your stories, and I'm inviting listeners, if they have any comments or any questions, they can go ahead and text their messages to us, and I'll do my very best to answer.
Oh, awesome.
And of course, I'd appreciate if you would like to, you could be a part of, you know, the comments and the communication that we have with our listeners. But I really, really appreciate
yeah.
you. And thank you so much for being so honest and open and sharing your life with us. And
absolutely, my pleasure.
Continue to do great. And if there's anything
yes.
you need that I can help you with in the future, just don't be afraid to call.
Well, thank you so much. I think I should probably add, so my future plans are getting involved and helping kids, you know, that are stuck in bad situations and going and speaking with them, you know, giving back something out of life.
That's fantastic. That's
yes.
great. And so see, you're using your situation, you're coming again from a place of power. So now
yeah.
you know what it's like to be in that situation and you're prepared to help those who are. So that's
yeah.
it's fantastic and that's great. And I really hope that you will be able to.
Thank you. I do too.
Thank you, Marie.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure. I loved it. And thank you for letting me speak today with you and tell my story.
You are welcome. You have a great evening.
Thank you. You too.
That was an amazing story. It's very hard sometimes to listen to stories like these, but there's always the part that brings me joy when someone tells of how they overcame whatever tragedies they'd experienced, whatever traumatic events they've had to go through in their lifetime. It brings me joy, and I hope that her story and all the other stories to come will serve as inspiration to anyone out there today who is going through something similar or who knows someone who's going through something similar. The purpose of this program is just to show listeners that life can be really tough. Sometimes it's extremely hard. And for some people, it gets to the point where they feel like they cannot go on. They cannot see a way out. But these stories are to inspire you and to give you hope, and to let you know that with the right kind of help, you too can be a survivor and beat whatever it is that you're going through. So I hope that you will continue to listen, that you will share our podcast so these stories can spread throughout the world and be inspiration to whoever needs it. If there's anyone listening who would like to share their story, please give us a call at 404-436-1032. That's 404-436-1032. And I'd be happy to talk to you and see how your story can be published on our podcast and be an inspiration to someone. Thank you so much once more for listening. And I am very excited about Marie's future. I'm excited about the other stories I have lined up to bring to you guys. And I really would appreciate if you would put your thoughts in the comment area, send us messages so we can know what you think, any advice, any information you have that may be able to help listeners or the listeners on where they can find resources to help them with similar problems. I'd really, really appreciate it. Thank you guys once more, and I will talk with you again soon. Have a great day.